CBS News. With these words, Peking Radio, monitored in Tokyo, told the world of the death of Premier Zhou Enlai.
Due to the worsening of his condition, despite all treatment, Comrade Zhou Enlai, the great author of the Chinese people, finally departed from us.
I'm Jerry Landay, reporting on the CBS Radio Network. Premier Zhou had been ill since 1972. In the past year, he'd grown worse. Cancer had affected his speech. Zhou, turning most of his duties over to his protege, Vice Premier Deng Xiaoping. Thursday, Zhou was dead at the age of 78. And Radio Peking quoted from a eulogy of the Chinese leadership.
His death is a gigantic loss to our party, our army, and the people of our country.
Professional students of China based in Hong Kong on China's southern rim have been assessing the death of Premier Zhou. Some of their observations now reported by Barry Kalb.
China experts here say the Chinese government is making a show of business as usual, perhaps to assure the population that Zhou's death will not disrupt the running of the country. For example, there were no major governmental appearances during the 4 or 5 days preceding Zhou's death. But Thursday, after Zhou had died, but before any announcement was made, several government leaders appeared in public in Peking. The government must meet to appoint Zhou's successor, and some experts are guessing that meeting has already taken place. While announcement of the successor may be held up until after the funeral, it would come as a big surprise if the new premier were anyone but the man who's been running the government during Zhou's terminal illness, First Vice Premier Deng Xiaoping. Barry Kalb, CBS News, Hong Kong.
More news after this.
Hi, I'm Mike Roy.
Well, I guess that'd make me Denny Bracken. Happy to greet one and all with a preview of the cooking thing for tomorrow.
Tomorrow we're going to rustle up a favorite dessert, peach brown Betty.
Ooh, has she got a sister for me?
Crispy on top, spicy, served with gobs of whipped cream or fruit sauce.
Oh, she sounds delicious.
Yeah.
See, I hope I get to meet her, huh?
Yeah.
But I suppose you'll be in the kitchen, too. You're not going to leave us alone.
You bet your life.
It's the way it goes sometimes, friends, on the cooking thing right here. Won't you tune us in for Brown, Betty and Company tomorrow on CBS?
Hello, this is Lloyd Nolan. I know from personal experience the heartache of having a loved one handicapped by mental retardation. That's why I'm urging your support for the people who are helping retarded children and adults in your community, the state, and the nation. And they're fighting mental retardation through research. Please join these good people in your local association of the National Association for Retarded Citizens. Thank you.
20 nations, rich and poor, reached agreement in Jamaica Thursday night on new arrangements for operating the monetary system of the world. A special committee of the International Monetary Fund has agreed to legalize the present system of floating exchange rates. And to help have and have-not nations alike, the committee agreed to increase by 45% the amount of money member nations of the IMF can borrow, and also to set up a special borrowing fund of more than $3 billion for the poorer nations alone. The federal watchdog of the country's stock and money markets, the Securities and Exchange Commission, wants to know if fraud was involved in the marketing of New York City securities. The stated purpose of the formal SEC probe into that question is to restore investor confidence in municipal bonds and notes. There have been reports that New York City officials and underwriters allegedly misstated city receipts to conceal New York's shaky financial condition from potential lenders. Nine labor leaders angrily quit a White House Labor Relations Advisory Committee Thursday, declaring that President Ford double-crossed them by vetoing the Common Situs Picketing Bill. That was the bill expanding the picketing rights and power of construction unions. And Labor Secretary John Dunlop is deciding whether to quit for the same reason. More CBS News after this.
Hi, this is Tony Orlando.
And Dawn, Selma, and Joyce.
Talking to the people.
Tony Orlando and Dawn are talking to people who have found bright new careers by going to technical school. Selma?
Here's a young lady, Kelly Blixton, with a super dream. What were you doing before you went to technical school, Kelly?
I was working my way around the world, but I couldn't offer anything but menial labor.
Kelly went to technical school and learned to be an electrician. Today, she works in a steel mill.
I'm the first, but I haven't had any trouble.
If you don't like the work you
do. Learn to do the work you like. Get a free Tony Orlando record. You can be more than you are. And the facts on how you can learn to do the work you like at technical school. Write Careers, Box 111, Washington, D.C., 20044. Careers, Box 111, Washington, D.C., 20044.
If you're qualified, you are going to get hired.
This was a public service announcement of this station, the U.S. Office of Education, and the Advertising Council.
Heavy fighting between Christians and Muslims again rocks Beirut. Reporter Doug Tennell says that the Palestinian command has ordered more of its guerrillas into the fight in support of the Lebanese Muslims. Tennell reports the sizable injection of Palestinian guerrillas into the fighting has encouraged the Muslims to start a new offensive, and that the scale of the civil war is growing. Tennell says that the implications of major Palestinian involvement could be serious, both inside and outside Lebanon. Prime Minister Harold Wilson of Great Britain has attacked what he calls the gun law regime in Northern Ireland, and he's vowed to continue Britain's fight against terrorism there. I'm Jerry Landay, CBS News.
CBS for Seattle, this is KIXI, and the time is 10:06.
CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. This is our bicentennial year, a time to pause and count our blessings. And among the greatest of these are the men and women of letters who flourished in our native land, who created a literature that was both typically American and universally admired. After all, it was our own Edgar Allan Poe who invented the kind of stories you hear on this program, and our own Mark Twain who carried them to the most sublime heights of fantasy and fun. At this time, we propose to give you an exhilarating taste of one of the most exciting stories of fantasy, mystery, and suspense the world has ever known.
Tell the king that if I am not released from this dungeon immediately, I shall cause a mighty calamity to befall this realm.
Oh, please, sir, have mercy.
Tell the king that I can call forth my magic powers and destroy the sun.
Destroy the sun, but...
But what?
Well, how can a man destroy the sun? It cannot be done.
Clarence, my boy, look at me. Do I look stupid?
Oh, no, sir.
Then, if it can't be done, why would I be willing to bet my life I can do it?
Our mystery drama, A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court, was adapted from the Mark Twain classic, especially for the Mystery Theater, by Sam Dan, and stars Kevin McCarthy. It is sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division and Luden's Medicated Cough Drops. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
Right now, True Value Hardware Stores offer you what's missing from almost everybody's life at this time of year: sunlight and warmth. Hi, Pat Summerall to tell you they offer a General Electric Sun Lamp Kit and a Titan Radiant Heater. The GE Sun Lamp is for fun and relaxation. Its ultraviolet light gives you a healthy, natural tan, even now when it's too cold for most of us to sit out in the sun. Get the lamp, a clamp-on holder, and a safety guard, and a sun worshiper's guide, all for just $13.77. And True Value Hardware Stores offer the Titan Radiant Heater for warmth. It's designed for use in barns, garages, and chilly basement workshops, so you can work in comfort, even in the cold. It gives you two fan-forced heat ranges controlled by an automatic thermostat. It's portable, and you can mount it overhead, too, out of the way. It's just $19.88. The GE Sun Lamp Kit and the Titan Radiant Heater. Sunlight and warmth from your participating True Value Hardware store. And you can charge it on Master Charge at many stores.
Here's a tip from your Better Business Bureau on the metric system. You know, use of the metric system as a uniform system of measurement in this country is growing rapidly. But of course, you want to know how it will affect you, right? Well, take driving your car, for example. The kilometer will replace the mile in expressing distances. Right now, 1 mile is equal to 1,760 yards, or 5,280 feet. Now, isn't it easier to remember that 1 kilometer is equal to 1,000 meters? Your car's speedometer will also change from miles per hour to kilometers per hour. So will speed limit signs on the highways. And again, the standard unit of measure will be the meter. And so when you order a tank full of gas, the liquid measure will be in liters, not gallons. For example, a fill-up of 16 gallons is equal to 60 liters. For more information on the metric system, write to Metric Information Office, National Bureau of Standards, Washington, D.C.
Twain begins his story with these words. It was in Warwick Castle that I came across a curious stranger. He attracted me by his candid simplicity, his marvelous familiarity with ancient armor, and the restfulness of his company.
I thought I would tell you my story, but I've kept a journal. Oh, how long ago that was. Do you know about transmigration of souls? Do you know about transposition of eras and bodies? Ah, well, read and learn.
He was gone. I examined the sheaf of papers he had left with me. Most of it was parchment, yellow with age. Old, old, incredibly old. Carefully, as I feared they would crumble within my fingers, I began to turn the pages. And now begins the stranger's story.
I'm an American. Born and reared in Hartford, in the state of Connecticut. A Yankee of the Yankees. My father was a blacksmith. My uncle was a horse doctor. And I was both at first. Then I went over to the great arms factory and I learned how to make everything. Guns, boilers, engine. Just about any and every kind of machinery you can imagine. I had a couple of thousand men working for me, but although they were under my jurisdiction, they refused to be under my thumb. You there. Shut that machine down.
Who says so?
I say so.
Well, who do you think you are?
I'm the boss.
Well, why didn't you go soak your head?
I'm giving you an order.
I don't take orders from you.
How about this kind of an order? Ow. Now, shut that machine down. Well, you see, you couldn't explain to him he was doing the wrong thing and wasting company time and material. So I had to develop other methods of communication. Well, that worked out pretty good for a while. But as the good book says, he who lives by the fist. We had a big, sulky fella named, aptly enough, Hercules, a surly brute he was. Everybody left him strictly alone. I should have left him alone, too, but I had to prove who was boss.
Oh, he laid me out with a crusher alongside the head that made everything inside crack. It seemed to spring every joint in my skull. And then suddenly the world went out in darkness.
Came to, I was sitting under an oak in the midst of a broad and beautiful country landscape. And there was a fellow on a horse looking down at me. A fellow fresh out of a picture book. In old-time armor from head to heel, with a sword and a shield and a prodigious spear. His horse had armor on, too, with red and green trappings that hung all around him. Oh, it was all gorgeous to look at. And then this apparition spoke to me.
Fair sir! Fair sir, will ye joust?
Will I which?
Will ye try a passage of arms?
Will I what?
For land or lady or knightly honor?
What are you giving me? Get along back to your circus before I report you.
Sir, thy incivil, discourteous, and unmannerly answer shall receive the chastisement it so richly deserves.
And don't hurry back. As he galloped off, I thought I'd seen the last of him. But wouldn't you know, he suddenly turned around, came rushing back with his long spear pointed straight at me. I saw he meant business, and so I was up a tree when he arrived.
Varlet, stand and fight.
Now, friend, I don't have any real quarrel with you.
Wilt thou tilt with the lads?
What makes me think he's from a circus?
Then draw thy sword.
He has to be from an asylum.
Cowardly wretch.
And so I'd better humor him. Friend.
I be not friend of thine.
Can't we discuss this reasonably?
Dost thou acknowledge thyself captive of my sword and spear?
Absolutely, and I'll be sure to acknowledge it to your keeper.
But of a surety, thou must this acknowledge to my keeper and thine, his beloved majesty, King Arthur.
How far are we from Bridgeport?
Bridgeport? I wit not the name. Come. We hie toward Camelot.
Camelot? You're kidding.
Of a surety, Varlet, thou art most free with thy tongue, and thou speakest the strangest language.
Camelot. Camelot. I repeated the word over and over. Camelot was probably the name of the asylum from which this lunatic had escaped. Well, I walked along beside his horse, hoping, expecting at any minute to see a familiar sign. And without warning, there stood in front of me a huge castle with flags and banners flying from the towers. I stopped. I was almost petrified with shock because I could see the place was filled with people dressed in the most outlandish costumes. And when they saw me, they were almost struck dumb with fright.
Fear not, gentlefolk. This dark and evil magician can do no further harm. I have vanquished him in terrible combat. Let us now throw him into the dungeon to await the pleasure of the king.
And they did it. Into a damp, dark, foul-smelling cell. And I didn't know what to think. Yes, I did. This could only be a dream. A dream that I had actually been somehow hurled back in time into King Arthur's court, a place I had hardly ever thought about or, to tell the truth, cared very much for. And then the cell door was opened, and in came a slim young fellow in shrimp-colored tights that made him look like a forked carrot. The rest of him was all blue silk and yellow lace. He looked at me, and he said,
I have come for you. I'm a page.
Go along. You ain't more than a paragraph.
Indeed, thou speakest a foreign tongue. What is thy name? From whence dost thou come? And thy raiment! Such outlandish clothes!
Well, friend, do me a service. Do you belong to the asylum, or are...
Fair sir, me seemeth
that... That'll do. You're a patient. Oh, if I could just see the head keeper for a minute. Just for a minute.
Head keeper? Oh, but that is a passing strange way to refer to his majesty.
Clarence!
I am called Amias Le Poulet.
Well, I'll call you Clarence for short. You look like a good-hearted fella.
Yes, 'tis true. And it shall be my undoing. For I was born in an unlucky year.
Oh, there's no such thing as an unlucky year.
Oh, indeed there is. 13 is most unfortunate. And I was born in 513. Wherefore, it is well known.
Oh, wait. Clarence. Hold. Stop. Say it again. And say it slow. What year was that?
513.
513. You, don't look it. Now, come, my boy. I am a stranger and friendless. Be honest and honorable. Are you in your right mind?
Forsooth!
Never mind that. Either I've become a lunatic or something just as awful has happened. Now, tell me, honest and true now, honest and true.
Hmm?
Where am I?
In King Arthur's court, and it please you.
And it pleased me. Oh, well. According to your notions, what year is it now?
538, 19th day of June.
No, it can't be. Do you mean to tell me that I'll never see my friends again? Never again?
Perhaps the divine will shall permit thee to.
Well, how? They won't be born for 1,300 years.
Please, good sir, be of merry countenance.
Oh, merry countenance. Do you realize... Wait, Clarence. What virtue are we Yankees celebrated for throughout the civilized world?
Mayhap I have not heard.
Thrift, Clarence. Thrift.
Hmm.
Now, your true Yankee never throws anything away, because you can never tell when it'll come in handy. I happened to read one time that the only total eclipse of the sun during the first half of the 6th century occurred on June 21st, 538 A.D. at exactly 3 minutes after noon.
Eclipse? Good, sir.
Yes, sir, Clarence. Eclipse.
Eclipse. Is it peradventure something good to
now,
eat?
Now, ask me how I intend to use that seemingly unimportant, insignificant, no-account, irrelevant little fact. Ask me.
If it please you, sir.
Mm-hmm. You say this is the 19th of June, 538? Well, Clarence, I say it's the 19th of June, 1879.
What magic dost thou speak, sir?
In either case, the day after tomorrow has to be the 21st. No eclipse is scheduled at all in 1879. Therefore, if we do have one... it's no dream, Clarence. It's no dream.
Come, sir. It is the signal that the dinner is done at the round table, and my master and thine, Sir Kay, desires to show thee before the king in the court.
Sir Kay?
Yes, sir.
And what plans does Brother Kay have for me?
Oh, sir, jest not. No humble monk is he. Sir Kay is foster brother to our liege King Arthur himself. He will have thee kept here till thy friends ransom thee.
Clarence, none of my friends have been born yet.
Oh, sir, speak not such madness.
All right, let's go. Get the exhibition over with. And what if I am among lunatics? I'm smart enough to become boss of the asylum.
Boss? Ah, is that thy name? Sir Boss!
King Arthur's court. How do I describe it? An immense place filled with loud contrasts, a babble of sound, a rainbow of color. The place was a madhouse, and at the center, a round table. And around it sat a great company of men dressed in splendid hues. Well, finally the king raised his hand, and it must have been a signal for silence.
Sir Kay, my good brother.
Yes, your majesty.
Is this the sorcerer?
It is even true, my liege.
Yes, it must be true. Who but a sorcerer would wear such outlandish clothing?
This suit costs $15. Second hand.
The suit is one of enchantment.
Who's that?
That's Merlin, sir.
Merlin?
Merlin, the mighty magician whom all men fear.
The suit is one of enchantment. I behold in him a creature of the devil.
A creature of the devil?
Your majesty, I see the devil emanate from his body. Burn him.
Well, then, if it must be done...
It must be done, your majesty.
Then let it be done day after tomorrow, the 21st day of the month, at high noon.
This is not the usual manner. They do not kill. They hold for ransom.
Well, Clarence, don't worry about it.
Well, you say I'm not to worry, but they burn thee at the stake high noon the day after tomorrow.
No, Clarence. They won't be able to swing it.
Swing?
No, you see, I won't be here.
Well... I wit not what thou sayest, Sir Boss. Where shalt thou be?
In Hartford, Connecticut.
Oh, is that the place of magic and enchantment where Sir Kay captured thee?
Oh, it's a place of magic and enchantment, I guess. In some ways.
But dost thou intend to return there?
Oh, I don't have to return. I never left.
Sir Boss, my poor wits cannot understand.
Don't worry about me, Clarence. I'm still there. All this is only a dream.
And I read on in the stranger's ancient manuscript, where he says he was carried off to a dark and narrow cell in a damp and filthy dungeon, with some scant remnants for dinner, some moldy straw for a bed, and no end of rats for company. And we must leave him there until it is time to return with the second act in just a few moments.
You can have great taste, lots of great taste and taste with Ludens. They're medicated cough drops with great taste in every box. Wild cherry, sweet and savory, menthol cool and flavory. Honey, the way you wish, with lemon or licorice. Oh, you can have great taste, lots of great taste and taste with Ludens.
The medicated cough drops that don't taste medicated. They taste great. Use only as directed.
Who's just about wiped out smallpox and smallpox vaccinations? Who got the world's pilots and control towers to speak English so you can land safely? Who helps you in dozens of ways? The United Nations. Learn what it's doing for you. Get the free UN booklet. Write United Nations Association, Box 475, New York 10017. There's always been a you in the UN. Presented by this station and the Ad Council.
Dreams. We all seek to understand the many ways in which God reveals His Word. Throughout time, God has spoken to man in dreams. Jehovah said in the Old Testament, "Listen to my words. If a man be a prophet, I make myself known to him in visions. I speak to him in dreams." So, pay attention to your own dreams. They might well reveal flashes of the future, predictions and warnings of things to come. They may give you a glimpse of God's guidance to lead you back to the peace and security of His way. For your free booklet on dreams, write to the Foundation Church, 1147 First Avenue, New York, New York, 10021. That's the Foundation Church, 1147 First Avenue, New York, New York, 10021.
Yankee, a two-fisted foreman in a Connecticut arms factory, picked a fight with the wrong party one day. When he recovered consciousness, he found himself in a strange place, peopled by folk who claimed to be members of King Arthur's court. Indeed, because of his odd 19th-century clothes and manner, he has been judged a sorcerer and has been condemned to the stake, the usual fate of such people in those times.
Oof. What a dream. What an astonishing dream. Well, I've waked just in time from being hanged or burned or drowned or something of that sort. Now what I think I'll do is nap again till the factory whistle blows, and then go down to the plant and have it out with Brother Hercules.
I give you good morning, Sir Boss.
What? You still here? Go along with the rest of the dream. Come on, scatter.
Oh, thou art indeed most merry, Sir Boss. Thou canst laugh in the face of dire peril.
All right. Let the dream go on. No, I'm in no hurry.
Sir Boss, what dream?
What dream? Why, the dream that I'm in right now. The dream that I'm in King Arthur's court. a person who never existed, and the dream that I'm talking to you, who are nothing but a work of my imagination.
Oh, indeed. And is it a dream that thou art to be burned tomorrow noon? Hmm? Answer me that.
Hmm. Clarence, I need you.
Aye, sir, boss?
Clarence, the only friend I have. Don't fail me. Help me devise some way to escape this jail.
Escape?
Yes, escape.
Oh, do but hear thyself, sir, boss. Escape? The corridors are filled with men at arms.
No doubt, no doubt. But how many? Huh? Not too many, I hope.
A full score. One may not hope to escape. Besides, there be other reasons.
Hmm?
Weightier reasons.
Hmm? Other reasons? What are they?
Well, tis said...
Huh?
Merlin, in his malice, has woven a spell about this dungeon.
A spell?
And there bides not the man in this kingdom desperate enough to cross its lines with you. Oh, now, God pity me, I've told it. And you, sir boss.
Yes?
Be kind to me.
Hmm?
Be merciful to a poor boy who means thee well, for shouldst thou betray me, I'm lost. Sir Boss. Sir Boss, please. Please.
Merlin. Merlin has wrought a spell, Merlin, forsooth. Oh, I never. Merlin, that cheap old humbug.
Sir
that
Boss.
That maundering old fool. Bosh. Pure bosh. The silliest bosh in the world.
Beware, beware. These are dreadful words.
Of all the childish, idiotic, chuckle-headed, chicken-livered superstitions that I ever... Do you know why I laugh?
No, but for our blessed lady's sake, do it no more.
Well, I'll tell you why I laughed. Hmm? I laugh because I'm a magician myself.
Thou?
Hmm?
Thou?
That's absolute sooth, Clarence.
Thou? A magician?
I've known Merlin 700 years.
700?
Don't interrupt. He's died and come alive again 13 times, and he always travels under a new name. Smith, Jones, Jackson, Robinson, Peters, Haskins, Merlin. Always has himself a brand new alias. I knew him in Egypt 300 years ago.
300?
In India 500 years ago. And he's always blathering around in my way every place. He makes me tired. He don't amount to shucks as a magician. Knows some of the old common tricks, I grant you, but he's never gotten beyond the rudiments and never will.
But, sir,
he's
boss...
Well enough for the provinces. One-night stands and all that sort of thing. You know, but, dear me, he oughtn't to set up as an expert.
But, Merlin...
Anyway, not where there's a real artist. Clarence, I'm going to remain your friend right along, and in return, you must be mine. I want you to do me a favor.
I? Get it word, in my power.
Get word to the king that I'm a magician myself. And the supreme grand high yuckamuck, and the head of the tribe at that. Tell him that I'm just going about quietly arranging a little calamity here that'll make the fur fly in these parts if Merlin's project is carried out and any harm comes to me. Will you do me that little favor, Clarence?
Oh, Sir Boss, please, I'm frightened.
Now, Clarence.
Promise me, poor sinner that I am, poor unworthy sinner, that thou shalt always be my friend, Sir Boss.
Sure.
And thou shalt never turn against me.
Never.
Never cast any of thine awful enchantments against me.
Absolutely.
And thou wilt always protect me.
Always.
Well, then, I hasten to do thy bidding.
Well, I could see how things work in this asylum. People simply take you at your word. So I was feeling good for a while. And then it occurred to me, when this boy calms down, he'll wonder why a great magician like me should have to beg a nobody like him for help. And he'll see that I'm a humbug. But then I reasoned, these lunatics can't really think. So I felt better. But then I got frightened again. I had sent the lad to scare his betters with a threat. Suppose they called my bluff. What could I do? Ah! Should have thought about my calamity first. Well, maybe the threat itself will be enough. Maybe. Clarence?
Sir Boss?
Hmm? Well, Clarence? Speak. Tell me, give me the verdict.
I hasted the message to our liege, the king.
Yes,
and
yes,
straight away, he had me led into his presence. He was frightened, even to the marrow. And straight away, he said,
I give the order for the instant enlargement of, what name is this mighty enchanter, lad?
Sir Boss.
Sir Boss. Rescue him at once from the vile dungeon. Clothe him in silks and furs. Lodge him as befits one so great. And let us pray that he will forgive us our foolishness.
Yes, Your Majesty. Your leave to speak.
You have our leave, Merlin.
This threat, this calamity, of what does it consist?
I know not. Lad, has Sir Boss described its awful nature?
No, sire.
And wherefore, lad, hath he not named it?
Well, mayhap, Merlin, it is too awful.
And mayhap, it does not exist.
It does not exist?
He hath not named his brave calamity. Verily, it is because he cannot.
But, Merlin, it may well
it
be...
It may well be foolish and idle vapor.
Do we dare provoke one of such great magic powers, Merlin?
Let him prove his brave words.
If thou sayest so, Merlin. Lad!
Your Majesty?
Return to Sir Boss, and in all courtesy, prevail upon him to consider all the factors in this perplexed case, and name the calamity, also the nature of it, and the time of its coming.
A sellout. I could have had a sellout if not for Merlin.
Oh, Sir Boss, delay not. To delay now were to double and treble the perils that already encompass thee about. Oh, please, be thou wise.
Be wise.
Name the calamity.
Is that all? Just name the calamity?
Oh, yes, Sir Boss. Oh, yes.
Name the calamity.
Yes. For one of thy mighty powers, a calamity should be but the work of a moment.
Well, you just don't pull a calamity out of thin air, Clarence. Now, if I could get out of here and collect some materials, some wires, some gunpowder, some...
Sir Boss, to delay is fatal. Thou hast but one more day. Thou shalt die tomorrow, the 21st day of June, 538.
Now, how's that going to look on my tombstone, Clarence? Born 1850, died 538. 538.
Sir Boss, does something occur to thee?
How long have I been shut up here?
Ye were enclosed here when yesterday had been well spent. It is 9 of the morning now.
Well, then I've slept well, sure enough. 9 in the morning, you say? And this is the 20th?
Yes.
And I'm to be burned at the stake tomorrow?
Yes, at high noon.
The 21st. My boy... We're saved.
Saved? Oh, Sir Boss, I never doubted thee.
And you know what the instrument of salvation will be. The eclipse.
Oh, the thing that thou didst speak of before.
Clarence, it seems I recall that Columbus or Cortez or one of those people used it as a trump card against some savages. Do you follow all this?
No, Sir Boss.
Mm-hmm. Why don't I play that trick myself?
Sir Boss, if thou canst arrange for a calamity...
Then why not? Wouldn't be plagiarism, because I'd be getting it in nearly 1,000 years ahead of those parties.
Sir Boss, life hangs upon it. Dost thou have a calamity?
Now just tell me once again, tomorrow is the 21st day of June, and this is the year 538.
It is true, Sir Boss.
Well, very well, Clarence. You shall go to the king, and I shall tell you what to say.
I await thy words.
You shall say to the king that at the noon hour tomorrow, I will smother the whole world in the dead blackness of night. I will blot out the sun, and it shall never shine again. The fruits of the earth shall rot for lack of light and warmth, and the peoples of the earth shall famish and die to the last man. Go, tell this to the king.
And when the threat was made, when the sought-after calamity was described, as the stranger wrote in the faded parchment document, Poor Clarence turned pale and collapsed with fright, and the Connecticut Yankee had to carry the boy out of the cell and hand him over to the guards. Well, now I must hand you over to some folk who have some words of wisdom for you, and then we shall all return here for the third act.
Isn't it nice to know you're free? To see the things you want to see. To touch the heights you dare to reach. To know you're all that you can be.
You seem to be in a hurry, sir.
Yes, I am.
You are in a hurry.
Oh, yes.
Well, no doubt you're rushing down to buy a Buick Electra because you know that Electra has the kind of ride and comfort Buick's famous for.
That's right.
And because you know it's America's second largest selling full-size luxury car.
You got it. You got
it. So you're hurrying because you want to get there before the Electras are all gone.
That's very good. How did you know I was going to buy a Buick Electra?
Well, it was on the shopping list you dropped back there, you see. Dozen eggs, quart of milk, Buick Electra.
Son of a gun, I forgot the pistachio nuts.
That's not on the list.
Well, I forgot them anyhow.
Spirit, Buick on the wing of wind. How it's gonna leave your spirit free. Who will cope with tomorrow for a brighter new day? There's one hope for tomorrow, the children of today.
There is only one hope for tomorrow, the children. Yet there are children in this world right now who have no hope for a brighter today. They're hungry, illiterate, living in misery, and when they grow up, if they grow up, they'll pass on this hopelessness. And it's the world's loss and the world's shame. You can help children to grow up with healthy bodies and educated minds, with a zest for life that they'll pass on to their children and to our world. Won't you please send a check to Save the Children Federation, Box 970, Grand Central Station, New York, 10017. That's Save the Children, Box 970, Grand Central Station, New York, 10017. Think about tomorrow.
We've got to save the children and save the world. Help them to grow.
Well, where is Mr. Mark Twain's misplaced Connecticut Yankee? Is he actually in King Arthur's court? There's only one way to find out. Wait and see if there's an eclipse. The eclipse, as you probably know by now, shall perform a double duty. It will set the date beyond all shadow of a doubt, and it will also save our hero's life.
Clarence? Did you deliver my message?
Oh, yes, sir, boss.
And?
Oh, we're struck dumb with fear and dread.
Let this be a lesson to you. Never lose hope, do you hear?
I hear, sir, boss.
Even when it's darkest.
It is even so.
Now, tomorrow. Tomorrow, I could have submitted meekly, given way to fear and terror. But I thought my way out of a tight place instead. And tomorrow noon, they'll conduct me to that stake, but I won't be burned on it.
No, sir, boss.
Tomorrow noon, I shall become the most powerful man in the kingdom. I can't wait for tomorrow. And I'll even tell you something else, Clarence. We may not have to wait for tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. True, sir, boss.
Because,
true.
You see, the calamity that I told you to describe to these people.
Oh, do not say those dread words
I'm
again.
I'm sure everyone's terrified.
Mm.
Isn't that true, Clarence?
Oh, verily, sir, boss.
Well, if I know human nature, they'll come here to see me, to try to compromise. And Clarence, listen, even as I mention it, it's the compromise on its way. Listen, they're coming. And if it's a good compromise, I'll accept. But if it isn't, I mean to stand my ground and play my hand for all it's worth. Sir Kay, and to what do I owe the honor of this visit?
The stake is ready. Come.
The what?
The stake.
Oh, but there's been some mistake. The execution is set for tomorrow.
The order has been changed and set forward a day.
No. It has to be tomorrow. It has to be.
Come. It is almost noon. Hasty.
Lost. I was lost. There was no help for me now. I was done for good. I was dazed. I was stupefied. I had no command over myself. The soldiers took hold of me and pulled me along with them out of the cell and along the maze of corridors and finally into the fierce glare of daylight in the upper world. And as we stepped into the vast enclosed courtyard of the castle, I received a shock. The first thing I could see was the stake.
We see before us one who has threatened to destroy the sun and thus end for all time all life on this earth. I say he speaks falsely. I say he is an impostor.
Merlin, speak thou more gently. Mayhap he does plan something magical.
There is no need to placate this false magician's heart. I'll see if he can save himself.
I scarcely heard Merlin's gloating voice. I knew now. I was a man without hope, and with each passing moment, the realization that I was about to die crept inch by inch through my veins and turned me cold.
Sir Boss! Sir Boss!
Clarence, what are you doing here?
I am thy servant, Sir Boss. It is meet that I serve thee to the end,
But there shall be no end.
There shall be no end, you say?
We know thou hast prepared a calamity.
I had prepared a calamity, Clarence.
Has aught gone amiss, Sir Boss?
They changed the day on me. The calamity was set for tomorrow, not for today.
I know, and 'twas through me that the change was wrought.
Clarence, what are you telling me?
When I spoke thy words to them, when I revealed the calamity in store, oh, how mighty was the terror it did engender. Then also, I saw that I could save the sun.
Save the sun, Clarence.
It would not be necessary to destroy the sun.
But Clarence.
Yes, Sir Boss, thou canst very well destroy the sun and return to thy far-off realm. But all here would be dead.
That was the idea.
Yes, and so I pretended unto this one and that one, the king, Sir Kay, Merlin, Sir Lancelot, that thy power against the sun could not reach its full until tomorrow.
Clarence,
so if
Clarence,
any would save the sun and save the world, thou must be slain today, while thy enchantments are but in the making and lack their full potency.
Maybe I should have explained.
It was but a foolish lie, but you should have seen them seize it and swallow it in the frenzy of their fright, as if it were a salvation from heaven. And all the while, I was laughing in my sleeve to see them so cheaply deceived. See how happy the matter is spread?
Happy? For whom?
Well, for all of us. Consider, thou wilt not need to do our son a real hurt. Make but a little darkness.
A little darkness.
Now, only the littlest little darkness. And cease with that.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When they see that first shadow fall, they will go mad with fear. They'll set thee free and make thee great. Have thy triumph, good Sir Boss. But I implore thee, remember my supplication and do the blessed son no hurt. For my sake, and I am thy true friend.
I can promise you this, that the son shall suffer no hurt from me ever. I guess when we're done in more by our friends than by our enemies. Tomorrow I could have worked a miracle. Today, I can only be fuel for a fire. Poor Clarence. What could I say to him? How could I explain it? I wanted to frighten the king and Merlin and the court, and I did. And I also frightened Clarence as well. I should have thought of that. All Clarence really wanted to do was to save the sun. He actually thought I would have to destroy it to prove my point. Well, it should be a lesson to me. But, unfortunately, I won't be able to learn from it. How do I get out of this? If it's a dream, I don't seem to be waking up. And here are the soldiers piling up rows of very flammable-looking wooden faggots all around me, on my ankles, my knees, my body. And I hear the voice of a monk droning something in Latin. And now, Now comes a man. His face is masked, the executioner. He carries a blazing torch. He kneels down at my feet. He's ready to apply the torch, and it's no dream.
Ye have threatened us with destruction.
Answer him, sir boss. Remove the smirk from his evil countenance.
Thou hast threatened our very font of life, the blessed sun itself. Well, show us thy powers.
Merlin, do not force
Your
him
Majesty, the man is a liar. He has no powers at all. He has lied.
Now, sir boss, now. Make them all quake and tremble.
Poor Clarence.
Poor Clarence? What sayest thou? Why poor Clarence?
Because.
Sir boss.
Because.
Sir boss, look.
Oh, the sun.
Look, everyone. The sun.
The sun.
Thou hast begun thy magic. See the black about the sun.
The eclipse. It can't be.
Sir boss. Sir boss, spare the sun.
Apply the torch. I am Merlin.
I forbid it. I am the king.
Then I shall apply it myself. I am Merlin. I fear no one.
Stand back, old man, before thou encounterest the wrath of Sir Boss. Even now, he destroys the sun.
Now, those are but random clouds. Hand me the torch.
It's the eclipse.
Executioner, hand me the torch.
I say no. Stay where you are. If any man moves, even before I give him leave, I will blast him with thunder. I will consume him with lightning. Even the king. Now is for you, John W. Merlin. Sit down. Sit down, or you're a dead man. That's better.
Sir Boss, be merciful.
I will think it over, Your Majesty.
Say no further into this perilous matter, lest disaster follow. It was reported to us that thy full powers could not attain their strength until tomorrow.
You think these are my full powers? I'm feeling very weak today.
Name any terms, fair sir, even to half of my kingdom. Oh, but stop. Oh, stop this gathering darkness.
I should like to, Your Majesty. Believe me, I should like to.
Thou shouldst like to?
But once begun, these calamities are difficult to untrack. It's best not to start them.
We understand full well, but each moment it grows more dark. And see, the people are struck dumb with fear.
As they should be.
How long, oh, how long shall thy anger last?
Oh, Your Majesty, Sir Boss never remains wrathful too long.
I implore thee, Sir Boss.
I shall let this darkness grow deeper for a little while longer in order to serve as a lesson.
Oh, we have learned our lesson.
And let all be silent while I gather my powers in order to reverse this terrible darkness and save our glorious sun. Clarence, what day is this?
The 21st.
The 21st? Mm-hmm. Hang it. You said it was the 20th.
By thy favor, Sir Boss, numbers flow through my head as water through a sieve.
Well, then, if it's the 21st, this is the 6th century, and this is King Arthur's court, and I might as well make the most of it. Oh, King, I have reflected. Whether I blot out the sun for good shall rest with you. These are my terms. You shall remain king over all your dominions. You shall appoint me your perpetual minister and executive.
Oh, yes. Oh,
pay
verily,
me,
yes.
Pay me 1% of such actual increase of revenue over and above its present amount as I shall succeed in creating for the state.
Anything thou wilt demand.
And if I can't live on that, I shan't ask anybody to give me a hand. Is it satisfactory?
Anything. Now, please, good Sir Boss, restore the sun.
Very well. First, you must untie my hands that I may use them in this business.
Away with his bonds! Set him free! Do him homage. He is the king's right hand. His seat is on the highest step of the throne. And now, good sir, sweep away this creeping night. Bring us light again. And let us bless thee.
I would say that you have all had just enough. Let all stand. Let all look toward the heavens. And now I declare, let the enchantment dissolve and pass harmlessly away.
Oh, the sun. Look! Look, the silver rim of the sun emerges!
The sun returneth!
Oh. I, the boss, have so commanded.
All hail the boss!
Hail the boss!
And so he became the boss. And to a primitive country, he brought the blessings of soap and toothpaste and gunpowder and books and railroads and telephones. And how did it work out? Well, this is only the exciting beginning of the story. Our purpose is to get you to go to the book itself and enjoy Mark Twain's glorious spoof on... Well, when Mark Twain spoofs, he spoofs just about everything. But before you run to your library or bookstore, wait a few moments for me to return.
America's big, beautiful travel value is available again. Greyhound's All-American AmeriPass. 7 days unlimited travel for only $76. 7 consecutive days of travel everywhere Greyhound goes in America. Canada, too. Go where you want, when you want. Be a real free spirit. Leave when you like, any day, every day of the week. Only Greyhound serves 48 states. You don't pay for your All-American AmeriPass until you're all set to go. And like Greyhound's 3 other AmeriPasses, you'll enjoy special discounts on hotels, meals, sightseeing, and other good things. So get going with a Greyhound All-American AmeriPass. 7 days unlimited travel for only $76. It's a great way to get in touch with family and friends for less money, because Greyhound's in touch with more of America.
A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's court. All we could hope to do in the limited time allotted us was get him there. You, of course, should follow his progress. And in this bicentennial year, what could be a happier celebration than several hours with the most American of all writers, Samuel L. Clemens, or, as he would have it, Mark Twain. Our cast included Kevin McCarthy, Robert Dryden, Russell Horton, and Arnold Moss. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
Lawyer Wilson. What could he have said? Hay, feed, and grain merchant Wilson.
What could he have said?
Go down the list. Robert Titmarsh, Eliphalet Weeks, Archibald Wilcox, Ingoldsby Sergeant.
What could he have said?
It was the only topic of conversation. The 19 Incorruptibles, starting with Banker Pinkerton on top and ending with poor Edward Richards on bottom, walked about with white and drawn faces, as if each of them was feverishly figuring out a way to get at that money. A head of steam was building higher and higher and fiercer and fiercer. Sooner or later, it would have to bust.
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by True Value Hardware Stores and the Greyhound AmeriPass. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
the air with bright and beautiful music. This is KIXI, Seattle.
CBS News, a cold spell continues to grip a large part of the nation. This is Doug Poling reporting on the CBS Radio Network. The cold is so severe that a power company has asked that hundreds of schools be closed in five states to alleviate the demand for natural gas. The Arkansas-Louisiana Gas Company says heavy usage of gas has lowered pressure in its feeder lines. Some of the coldest weather in recent days has been in Minnesota. A report from Bruce Hogovic of station WCCO in Minneapolis.
The temperature in Minneapolis has been below zero since 10 o'clock on Tuesday night, resting between 18 below and 5 below. Areas of northern Minnesota have reported 40 below. An electric power company has put out a plea to 150,000 customers in rural Minnesota to ease up on power consumption. The AAA office, which runs an emergency car starting service, estimates that up to 50,000 cars have not started on each of the past two mornings in Minneapolis alone. Spokesman Paul Nelson says calls for help come in at 350 per hour during the morning.
With the cold weather that we've been having this week, it's taken a lot longer for our men to go out and start the cars because they have been just so cold. Much of the time, just a straight boost really isn't enough.
The cold weather is nothing new in this area. An average of 34 days out of the year, it goes below zero. The current cold snap will give way to warmer weather on the weekend. Bruce Hogovic for CBS News, Minneapolis.
More news in a moment.
Now, from Business Week, here is Peter Roberts with your summary of the top business stories to expect in 1976.
In Washington, look for Congress to hammer out new tax legislation that can vitally affect your business. Watch for monetary strategy by the Federal Reserve that can influence the course of the nation's economic recovery, and plan investment opportunities in light of new SEC regulations that can dramatically reshape the markets. Elsewhere, stay abreast of new challenges faced in the marketplace by major industries such as oil, autos, steel, and agriculture. Watch key executives work out new marketing strategies as economic conditions change, and stay on top of the problems that state and municipal governments face in this year's growing cash crunch.
For answers to these and other tough business questions, you need Business Week. This week's issue of Business Week is on newsstands now. Pick up your copy today. Business Week. When it comes to news, it's all business.
Flags are at half staff in Peking, and Chinese newspapers are being printed with black borders as China mourns the death of Premier Zhou Enlai. The Chinese embassy in Tokyo says Zhou's funeral will be held next Thursday in Peking. The 78-year-old Zhou, one of the co-founders of Communist China, died of cancer. President Ford has issued condolences to the Chinese people and government, saying Zhou will long be remembered as a remarkable leader. This comment on Zhou's leadership from Christopher Phillips, president of the National Council for U.S.-China Trade.
One could say that Zhou Enlai was a modern pragmatist, as contrasted with some of the more ideological elements of the Chinese leadership. He certainly has been associated with policies which appear to commit China to move ahead, to industrialize, to develop itself internally. To do so with the minimum possible disturbances along the way.
Phillips and others interested in improved contacts with China will remember Zhou as the man who paved the way for the thaw in U.S.-Chinese relations. It's expected that his job as premier will go to his deputy, Teng Xiaoping. He's regarded as a strong supporter of increased contacts with the United States. Reacting to published reports that his agency has spent about $6 million aiding non-communist politicians in Italy, CIA Director William Colby says we have not spent a nickel in Italy in the past few months. Administration officials refuse to say whether public exposure of the $6 million plan had forced its cancellation. President Ford appears to be in big trouble with big labor. Nine union officials Thursday resigned from a key government advisory board to protest the president's veto of that bill to expand strike power at construction sites. One of those who quit the panel was Teamster President Frank Fitzsimmons. Now this.
First down and goal to go at the 4-yard line as Joe Kapp, and that defense moves in tight against him.
Take me out to the bowl game. I'm Win Elliott, CBS Radio Sports, and do I have a weekend for you? January 17th and 18th it is, and I'll be here with 28 Super Bowl specials, the past, present, and future. You'll hear Super Bowl 10, Jim Kelly and Ed Ingalls with The Game, plus those 28 special broadcasts through the whole weekend, January 17th and 18th, over most of these CBS Radio Network stations.
Who will cope with tomorrow for a brighter new day? There's one hope for tomorrow, the children of today.
There is only one hope for tomorrow, the children. Yet there are children in this world who will never see a brighter new day. You can give a child hope. Write for information to Save the Children, Box 970, Grand Central Station, New York, 10017. That's Save the Children, Box 970, Grand Central Station, New York.
Postage rates went up 30% with the recent advent of the 13-cent first-class stamp, but the government says it's a bargain. That, according to Postmaster General Benjamin Baylor, who says postal rates are a good value for the consumer and cites some countries where they are higher. But Baylor concedes such countries as Canada and Switzerland have lower postal rates. This is Doug Poling, CBS News.
I'm Ben Franklin, and once again I quote from the wisdom of Poor Richard's Almanac. Regarding the Bible, I have been taught that there are not 10, but 12 commandments. The first is increase and multiply and replenish the earth. The 12th is love one another. They may be a little misplaced, and the last should perhaps be the first. However, I always willingly obey them both whenever I have the chance. It is the man and woman united that make the complete human being. One alone is like half a pair of scissors. And now, some wisdom from a modern source.
Insurance store shopping is the newest, easiest, and maybe the best way to shop for insurance. Insurance store agents are independent agents. They can give you the best coverage for what you want covered because they can choose from so many famous brands, like Continental Insurance, the company with the Continental Soldier. The insurance store. As Ben said, a word to the wise is enough.
CBS for Seattle, this is KIXI. The time, 11:06.
The sounds of beautiful music for beautiful Puget Sound continues on KIXI.
Michelle, Michelle,
on this turn,
see,
Joe.
Let's see. Oh, no.
Looks
look
like you didn't make it, Joe. And is it going to cost you?
Oh, I guess. But hurry, that's it. I'm wiped out.
Oh, too bad, old buddy. But that's life.
For too many people, that is life. But we believe it shouldn't be. The Campaign for Human Development. People together with hope. The United States Catholic Conference.